Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to The Shot Podcast. I'm Joe Dar, and I'm here in the Sydney studio with Charles Firth.
Hello.
We have joining us from Melbourne, Dave Milner.
G'day, Joe.
And our very special guest, very exciting for us this afternoon, is Mr. Peripatetic himself, the man behind the campaign for Yes 23, Thomas Mayo.
Kapul Goiga. That means good day in my language, Kalau Lagau Ya.
Oh, you're the one that has been attracting all of the racist kind of horror. You're the one who was in the nasty AFR cartoon, but you've transcended that and you've become the popular face. I have been at railway stations where Thomas Mayo has turned up and he has become the kind of the celebrity campaigner, would you say, Thomas?
Oh, I don't know about that, but I'm just working really hard, and I think I've found that most Australians are curious, or, you know, as we experience at the train station, many are saying I'm voting yes. So
yeah, they do.
It's a different feeling out in public wearing the yes shirt to what we see on social media and the polls.
And I think that there is a great deal of curiosity about what the referendum can mean for us as a country. And Dave, you explored some of this in the piece that you wrote for The Shot about the opportunity that it affords us, some of the confusion it can throw up and the dissonance that we've been through all through our history.
Yeah, I did. I guess what I was writing about in that piece, I think in hindsight, was about the way I was formally educated as a white person in a settler colony and not really getting a very accurate picture. And then it got me thinking about how history had been taught in prior generations. So I look back at the sort of stuff Australians were told about themselves in John Howard's era, and then even earlier, the history that he was looking at. And I couldn't help but thinking there's a whole lot of bullshit to work past for you, Thomas.
Yeah, there is. There's a lot of a long history of Australians being taught to ignore our Indigenous culture and heritage, you know. So that is quite a barrier to get over. But I think there's been a lot of hard work done by many people. The truth-telling that's going on for a long time, reconciliation work, royal commissions are full of truth-telling, evidence truth-telling. All that hard work, I think, has brought us to this moment where we have an achievable opportunity here.
Absolutely. And I mean, what that opportunity means and what the shape of it is, I think, is, you know, in a lot of Australians' minds, it is a bit nebulous. They don't really see what that's going to look like. Can you sum it up for us?
Yeah, real simple. We're just saying yes or no to recognising Indigenous people in our constitution, a constitution that has explicitly excluded Indigenous people for a very long time, and to do it in a practical way, an Australian way, which gives the people a hand up, basically, that says, you know, we've been making decisions about you, Indigenous guys, for a long time, and now we're going to set up an expectation that we should listen to you first. It's that simple.
Hmm. I mean, that sounds pretty simple.
Isn't Australia entirely based on the opposite of that idea? Like, isn't the whole sort of, part of the, I'm not being joking, which is, isn't the actual problem that is being faced by the Yes campaign that actually, if you look at, you know, what Dave was writing about in his article, the actual sort of constitutional basis, like the broad sort of fundamental idea that Australia was founded on in 1788 when it was colonised, was let's just definitely never listen to Indigenous people. I think that's why it's been such a hard thing to communicate. This is my perspective on it, which is Anthony Albanese was sort of going, look, it's not a radical proposal. It's not a huge thing. And I think what he meant by that is it's not going to lead to, you know, a complete annihilation of white people in Australia or something like that. It's not going to lead to sort of wholesale upheaval in the economic lives of people. But it is a profound change to the sort of philosophical underpinnings of what Australia is to say, actually, you know, and it's such a reasonable, it's a transitional demand to say, you know what, you know, actually maybe we should listen to Indigenous people when they're affected by decisions that are made about them.
Yeah, I mean, it is a big shift away from ignoring that Indigenous people were ever here. You're right. But on a legal basis, on a basis of how our democracy works, it isn't radical.
Mm.
You know, the Parliament remains supreme in that it decides all laws, how funding is allocated in the country, what programs and policies are implemented. And so it's simply Indigenous people having a say. You see, one of the things that we're up against is Australia is still in that place where it thinks that, you know, that and it has worked for most Australians the way that it is now. And if we were to call for special rights, you can see the way the No campaign is trying to scare people with that. It would be an impossible thing to achieve. So it is a modest proposal that given all of the injustices, all of the marginalisation of Indigenous people, the massive gaps in education and health and employment, life expectancy of around 8 years less, that we're not calling for a special right here. We're asking for an enhancement to our democracy so that Indigenous people can just have a say.
Mm.
And, you know, I mean, sure, there's people that think that, you know, we should have a whole lot more. But, you know, this is an important step, that we should just have the opportunity to come together, work it out amongst ourselves who speaks for us, not someone that a political party chooses, because Indigenous politicians don't represent Indigenous communities and their interests, because they're accountable to their electorate and their political party, not the Indigenous communities that they might try to speak for. This is simply a voice that can coherently speak to the solutions for those problems that I mentioned in a transparent way that all Australians see and Indigenous people ourselves can see our representatives saying, and we can hold them to account. You know, a process of electing representatives ourselves. The reason it's not radical is actually also it's consistent with the way our democracy works. But I do believe that it is going to achieve great strides in progress, though. And that's what I think a lot of Australians are interested in. Is this going to be practical? Is this going to close the gap? Is this going to improve lives? And is it going to do in a way that doesn't radically transform our democracy where we're going to lose something? And the answer is, you know, it will bring about great change, but nobody's got anything to lose and we've got everything to gain by it.
It's interesting what you're saying, because when I looked at the structure of it, I bought your little purple book, by the way, it really did seem like an extraordinarily reasonable, level-headed proposal without any scary overreach, which made me think about the negative reaction to it and the No campaign. And I'm wondering, do you think, how disingenuous are the people driving the No campaign?
Completely disingenuous. They understand what they're doing. They are seeking to confuse and to scare Australians. And I think, you know, especially elder Australians might be familiar with these things when I mention them. But in the 60s, when Indigenous people were going to get equal wages, they said that cattle stations, you know, businesses would shut down. They wouldn't be able to afford to run without their Indigenous labour just being paid a bit of flour and tobacco.
Without slave labour, essentially.
Yeah, it was. Yeah. I mean, they were working 16-hour days and just getting enough sustenance to work every day. Yes, that's right. It was slave labour. And when land rights were being established after the Gurindji-Wavell walk-off and their great success, and it was a Liberal Prime Minister that saw land rights in the Northern Territory through, but people were saying, you're going to lose your backyard, you're going to lose your farm, all those sorts of things. Then in the 80s, late 80s, when Bob Hawke was establishing the Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander Commission, a voice, Howard was saying that this would be a black parliament, that people were saying that there's going to be a right for Indigenous people to veto the parliament. And in the 90s with native title, you know, Mabo winning that high court case, native title legislation being negotiated, they said again, you're going to lose your backyards, you're going to lose your farms. And all of those things came to pass, equal wages, land rights, you know, the Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander Commission. And none of those, you know, none of those doomsayers were correct. None of those things happened. Nobody lost anything. But Indigenous people took some steps forward. You know, and we're still a long way from being equal with other Australians, and that is what this voice is going to do. It's going to be unifying, and it'll help us to have equality in all those important outcomes for our children.
And that was even the case with the national apology, is that you had people, including Peter Dutton, saying that it would open up the possibility for compensation and reparations, so therefore we shouldn't do it. And as you say, at every turn, this overreach, and I would go so far as to say this racist overreach, has proven to be incorrect and a fallacy. And at every point, we have matured and strengthened and become more unified as a nation because we have taken these modest steps along the way towards reconciliation.
Yeah, we celebrate each of those steps, really. You know, I mean, they were great advancements for Indigenous people and for our nation. I mean, imagine if we didn't do those things, you know? I'd be here, you know, just going home and collecting my flour and tobacco and... You know, I mean, what a shit society would
and
we
exhausted.
Be? You know, like, yeah.
16 hours a day.
Well, I'm doing that. But, yeah.
And the thing is that those people who supported that now are embarrassed at the advocacy that they made. And in Peter Dutton has had to apologise for the way that he handled the national apology. And yet he has sees, you know, he can't see the symmetry in what he's doing now.
But doesn't that go to the disingenuity of the whole thing?
Yeah, because isn't that just the perpetual conservative state of being terrified of fucking everything and then 5 years later being, oh, I got that wrong?
No, but I think it goes deeper than that, which is I think that they know that it's just a tool. Like I think most people, especially those running the No campaign.
Oh, no, certainly.
Know that racism is just a tool. It's so funny. I talked to this Anglican pastor guy who works at Moore College on the weekend.
Total
fuckwit. And and he was voting no.
I
was
literally
I went to my high school reunion, right? Like 30-year reunion. Literally the only person there who was going to vote no. And it was like, what? So why? Why are you going to vote no, mate? And it was like, well, I think other people are really worried about it. You know, they're really fearful of, you know, blah, blah, blah. And it was like, well, hang on, no, but what about you? Like, he even had the insight to know that, you know, he couldn't pull off, you know, an argument about himself because, of course, he wasn't scared of anything because there's nothing to be scared of. So he just placed it in the other thing. And then so I said to him, so you're just entirely basing your decision on fear. Like, so it's just an entirely fear thing. And he said, fear is a great way to control people. I think the problem with the world is that we don't have enough fear. Now, he's coming from an Anglican, you know, Christian background, like that conservative frame, but it gives you such an insight into it's totally cynical. Like, it's a cynical tool. Like, I think Dutton's whole, I mean, do you feel betrayed by Dutton over this or did you just know that he was going to be a...
Look, if I spent all my time worrying about what politicians say and, you know, I would never get out there and help people to understand. And that's what I'm focused on, you know, just having conversations with Australians like you were. I hope you managed to get that guy to think twice. You know, and when people just look at the words, I mean, look at it in black and white. It's 92 words that'll be inserted in the Constitution if this gets up, you know, and it just simply recognises Indigenous people as the First Peoples by establishing a voice to make representations on matters that relate to us. That's what we're saying yes or no to. The Parliament decides the rest. The third point in that new section 129 says the Parliament decides all matters relating to the voice, including the composition, powers, functions and procedures. You know, so it's just consistent with the way that we do things now. The only difference is it sets up an expectation from everybody that votes yes that politicians will listen to Indigenous people before they make decisions about them. And there's plenty of evidence that is how you get better outcomes and you save money, taxpayer money, but importantly also you save lives.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
I mean, I think the interesting thing, because there is this sort of dissonance at the very heart of the No campaign anyway, because as they're going about, they're saying, well, we do want a voice, we just want to legislate it, which rather undermines all of their arguments about it's going to be bureaucratic or it's going to be, you know, kind of foster
They're also
disunity.
Saying that it's tokenistic and it's also too powerful potentially. It's like Schrodinger's voice.
It doesn't make any sense at all. But what I thought might be useful for our listeners is we want recognition of our First Nations, obviously, in the Constitution, because why would you not want to celebrate that? But the idea of actually entrenching the voice in the Constitution is important, not just because for time immemorial it does set up that expectation, as you say, Thomas, but previous voices have been abolished at the whim of governments. And we have had now, across our history, across the last sort of 100 years, there have been many, many different efforts from governments, both Liberal and Labor, to set up voices that within 5, 10, 20 years have just simply been eradicated by their successor governments.
Yeah, I think that's a really important thing for listeners to understand. You're right. In the 1920s, it was the Australian Aboriginal Progressive Association. Then came the Aboriginal Advancement League. There was ACATSI, the NAC, the NACC, and ATSIC that I mentioned earlier. And all of these representative bodies were established under one government and destroyed by the next.
Yeah.
You know, silenced. And we know also from a pattern throughout history that when we have these representative bodies, including ATSIC, we make great strides in progress. You know, we improve conditions, better housing. All of those things happen better and quicker when Indigenous people have an ability to make representations to decision makers. And we also know that when we don't, things get worse.
Yeah. Mm.
And so when we came together at Uluru, this is where the call for the voice comes from the Uluru Statement from the Heart. It was in late May 2017, a unique opportunity for Indigenous people. We had 13 three-day dialogues covering the entire continent and adjacent islands, region by region, you know, debated and discussed that history and what steps we should take next. They elected delegates. They brought the priorities from those regions to a culminating convention in the heart of the nation at Uluru, and they made the Uluru Statement from the Heart. And I was there. And those lessons that we need a voice, but we know voices are taken away if they're only legislated, that we make better progress when we have a voice, that caused us to call for a voice enshrined in the Constitution so that it's set up by the will of the Australian people, by the expectation of the Australian people, that all parliaments should listen to the advice that Indigenous people have about their lives. This illustrates that this isn't an Albanese idea, as the No campaign tends to say. It's not a, you know, it's not a Labor Party campaign. This is not a Canberra voice. This is a voice that has come through a lot of hard work by Indigenous people to make this invitation to Australians, and we really hope that they'll vote yes. And there's a lot at stake with that too.
I think there is, and I think just to that point of the representative nature of the group that met at Uluru, and in fact that there really was an incredibly rigorous process of years in the making that went on to get to that point at Uluru where you had those different voices coming together and synthesising and all, in fact, speaking with one voice to say, this is what we want and this is what we need. So when people say, you know, why don't we have a constitutional convention if we're going to move to a referendum, those sorts of things, they're ignoring the depth of time, effort, energy and the representative nature of that process that got us to Uluru in the first place.
Yeah, that argument from the No campaign is disingenuous as well. You know, as there's been so much hard work, multiple joint select committees, an expert panel, Uluru process. Since the Uluru process, another joint select committee that reported in 2018, and then the co-design process led by Professor Marcia Langton and Tom Calmer under the Morrison government, you know, with the leadership of Ken Wyatt, who was a Minister for Indigenous Australians at the time. Over and over again, we keep coming to this need to constitutionally recognise Indigenous people in a way that they have called for, which is simply to give us an advisory voice.
Which seems really very simple and straightforward.
It is. So I encourage the listeners to help your friends and family to understand this. We've got to get through that misinformation. I don't want you to wake up the next morning, you know, and feel like you could have done more or blame the media. you know, it's up to us. Mm. You know, we can't count on anyone else but ourselves to help our families and friends to understand.
And that's the amazing thing. One of the points that they make in the training is that every vote is essentially like a marginal seat vote in like an election, because it actually is like every single – like it needs to be a majority of people in the majority of states.
Yes.
So it's not like, you know, if you're in a safe seat, your vote doesn't really count. Every single vote in this country counts just as much as it would in if you're in a marginal seat. So, you know, like if you're in a place where lots of people are going to vote yes, actually you need to be in a place where every single person votes yes, because there will be pockets of places where lots of people are voting no. And those votes will be actually able to countervail, you know, completely distant places, which you wouldn't normally think of if you're voting, you know, in an election.
Yeah.
We need 4 out of 6 states to get up as well. So the territories, sadly, their vote does count a little bit less because they're not a state.
Yeah.
So, you know, in the Northern Territory, my vote is only worth half as much sort of thing.
Yeah.
I live in Darwin.
Yeah. I see. I wish I hadn't changed my voting registration from South Australia, but South Australia's looking pretty good. I mean, I think the focus is New South Wales, Victoria, Tasmania, South Australia, and then Queensland and Western Australia. We just need to make sure that there's enough people who vote yes there to contribute to the national, if we say that they're lost, and we shouldn't say that they're lost, because there's lots of great Queenslanders and Western Australians out there.
You know, look, people are saying, or the No campaign saying they've got Queensland in the bag, right? And I don't agree with them. I did a tour from, you know, doing multiple town halls and events from Maroochydore and Caloundra, you know, and pretty a whole lot of towns into Eidsvold inland a bit and up to Mackay, including Bundy and Bundaberg and Gladstone. And, you know, it was each event was packed out. There was a lot of people that were undecided, but they walked out of there when they had that simple explanation that I've already given, you know, and saying that they'll vote yes. And we signed up supporters walking around the streets with my yes shirt. You know, I wasn't heckled or anything like that. You know, people occasionally stopped and asked a question, or, you know, said they were voting yes too. You know, and I think it sort of helps us in Queensland that the No campaign is saying that they're going to lose, because, you know, I like my rugby league and I back Queensland. And,
and
we love being the underdogs, so I reckon Queensland can get up, you know.
Know that you could say that Queensland is the underdog in rugby league, could you?
Well, they always say we are, but we always win.
Hey, this is a Melbourne podcast. We don't talk about rugby. Thomas, related questions. What is the most helpful thing Australians can do to help this get up? And what is the biggest barrier to this getting up?
So three things that I'd love every listener to do is to go to the yes23.com.au website if you can, donate. We need resources to run this big national campaign and reach every Australian. We also need volunteers, so please volunteer. Help Joe and I on the train stations.
Oh, yes.
And, you know, getting around. And you know, just putting a bit of information into your fellow Australians' hands. We'll be doing a lot of door knocking. There was a lot of door knocking over the weekend, and there will be a lot more. So please volunteer. And lastly, help us with visibility. So, you know, go to the Yes23 site again. You can get a shirt, a hoodie that I'm wearing. You can get placards and badges, all of those things. We want a sea of yes by the time we reach the final couple of weeks to the referendum, and I would love for you to help us with that.
And I think one of the things that the lessons that were learned from the last federal election campaign on a seat-by-seat basis, where the community independents were successful, was that thing about visibility and giving permission for people to try something different. So people who had been, you know, rusted on Liberal, suddenly, you know, their neighbour had a placard up. They saw people walking down the street wearing T-shirts. Their sense of community and possibility was formed by that visibility. And I think that that's really important. I've pretty much decided I'm only wearing Yes merchandise.
I've noticed that, Joe. Yeah.
Between now. And I have a whole range of different I've got my volunteer T-shirt. I've got this one. I've got one nice new black one coming. But I've also got the support Uluru from history. So you can go back into the archives and find things. So I think it is about that, just being very present. And as we've discussed, not thinking that if you're in a safe left progressive area, that means you can relax. We need to offset some of those other areas, but also, you know, we're all contributing to that big national vote as well.
I think there's a big thing in what you're saying about the visibility making it acceptable, and that sort of runs up against what Australians have been taught for so long. Seeing your neighbour thinks that this is a perfectly acceptable, reasonable thing, it just makes it easier for you to get on board that train if you're leaning that way anyway. So, yeah, definitely an important part of this.
Yeah, and I think, you know, one of the strategies is with the negative polls and things like that is to try and take the wind out of our sails. But as I said, it's a very different feeling. I wear, you know, same as Joe, I wear this shirt all the time. Nobody's heckled me. Nobody's, you know, you get a lot of smiles. You get a lot of interest. It starts a conversation. And from wearing my shirt and that every day,
and being the celebrity campaigner, obviously.
I do believe that most Australians are, you know, are ready for this and are fair-minded. They just need that confidence, and they need someone that they love, someone that they trust, you know, to give them a call. And I encourage people to do this as well and just say, hey, I'm voting yes. You know, I've looked into it. It's safe and it's meaningful. I'd like for you to vote yes too. And you'll be surprised how many people will just walk with you when you say that.
Walk with us along that journey. We have left now the camp, base camp. So we're on the way. I think we're going to end up in a good spot come October 15. But as Thomas says, and we all know, we can't take anything for granted. So we know you're a very busy man, Thomas. So thank you for stopping by here at The Shot. Charles is trying to twist Thomas's arm to write something. He said as a wharfie, he's well versed in the word fuck and can probably include that at least once or twice throughout a track.
I'm a bit rusty, you know. Being
he's been very civilised. But we've been thrilled to have you here today. So get out there, everyone. Yes23.com.au. .au. Everything. We're just universal here. And buy, donate, give your time and your money to help get the result that we know that Australia needs.
Thank you, everybody. I really appreciate it.
And just for the record, which way are you voting? Yes or no?
Yes. Definitely yes, like everybody else.
Thank you all. We'll be back next week.
Our gear is from Rode and we are part of the Iconoclast Network. See ya.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.